Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
From Autosport Magazine and Autosport.com, I'm Luke Smith, and this is the Autosport Podcast. More than 50,000 Dutch fans have descended on the Red Bull Ring for this weekend's Austrian Grand Prix, and Max Verstappen was not going to let them down. After scoring pole position on Friday in qualifying, the reigning world champion picked up the maximum 8 points on offer in today's sprint race, extending his lead at the top of the driver's standings. It was a race that saw Verstappen go lights to flag and rarely face any threat from behind, as the Ferrari duo of Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz were left to squabble between themselves, while George Russell was a lonely fourth for Mercedes, bouncing back from a big crash in qualifying. We also saw Mick Schumacher put up some brilliant defence against Lewis Hamilton, Fernando Alonso failed to start, and there was even some controversy off track as Sebastian Vettel was sanctioned for storming out of the driver's briefing on Friday night by the FIA. To recap all of today's action in Spielberg, on the way back to our Airbnb after both completing a track run, I am joined by Autosport F1 editor Matt Q. Matt, firstly, how was your track run?
It was okay. Obviously, it's very hilly up to turn one, and then even more steep into turn three, and you get to turn three and you think, oh crap, this is all downhill from here, and you just come around the right hander and there's about another 50 feet of elevation, and at that point I had a bit of a sense of humour failure, but then just let my legs sort of carry me the rest of the way down on the downhill. So it was all good, thank you. It's a nice release of endorphins after a good few days.
Excellent. We hope that does come across in tonight's podcast. I will say this is probably the toughest track run of the season, but it is always good fun. But anyway, the more important on-track matters today, of course, was Max Verstappen once again out of reach, it seemed like. Was there any way anyone could have stopped him today?
I'm going to say no. But that doesn't mean he can't be caught in a Grand Prix. And this is something I've been writing about this evening, doing our analysis based on sort of practice times from this morning and the sprint race. So the way I've done it is obviously Leclerc and Sainz were clearly tripping over one another again. You know, a bit of a legacy from Silverstone. And while they may protest that it's all in hand, you can tell from some body language in the press conference that this is irksome for them again. But when they sort of had finished fooling around, getting it wrong, essentially. Verstappen was 3 seconds up the road, and at the flag, he's 1.6 seconds. So that margin has sort of been cut in half, and you can look at that as perhaps Verstappen easing off. But I've been doing some analysis of this, and basically Verstappen's admitted to taking too much out of his tyres too soon. So if you remember back to the Emilia-Romagna sprint race, that's the exact inverse of what happened there, where Leclerc bolted off and then took too much out of it and sort of left himself prey to Verstappen. Only Verstappen in Imola hadn't been tooling around with Sergio Perez to fall so far back. So take the Ferrari teammate squabble out of the equation, and Leclerc could have been there or thereabouts. And I was asking Verstappen afterwards sort of the state of the RB18, because he had a really sloppy lap but still got pole, and qualifying's been the only weakness really of the RB18 since it stopped sort of going pop in the early races. And he said, no, we still have a weakness, and it's we're overweight. This Adrian Newey car is not down at the weight limit, and we know that a lot of cars have struggled with the sort of getting down to the minimum weight limit because of the crash structures. I'll try and keep this brief, but let's say it's 5 kilos over. That in race trim, when you're on full fuel, isn't much. But when you take 100 kilos of fuel out on your qualifying run, or at the end of a stint, or at the end of a race, sorry, whether that be sprint or a full Grand Prix distance, again, it's become a bit more pronounced. So take away the Ferrari squabble, put Leclerc in DRS range with a bit of a faster car at the end. As the times show, he was a faster driver. Maybe there's something for Ferrari to fight for and sort of cause a bit of a Red Bull upset.
Brilliant analysis, I must say, Matt. We're going to have that full article up on autosport.com.
It is up. It's up as
already.
We record,
wow,
yes.
Fantastic. Great work by our Autosport editorial desk. So, yeah, make sure you do go and have a read of that. You mentioned the Ferraris and their squabbling. Talk about that body language a bit. What did you pick up in the press conference? Obviously, both Leclerc and Sainz were there. When they came into the pen, even though they just walked past, they seemed pretty... There was no sort of like chatting or sort of matiness between them. It was all seemed pretty stern and getting on with things. How were they in the presser?
Short answers, which is probably most unusual for Carlos Sainz. He can be really eloquent where he wants. We get a good few sort of stories out of him. So that's one thing to take from it. Two, how they sort of potentially deviated off script. It started like, we wouldn't have caught Verstappen if we hadn't have been sort of tripping over one in each other, so it's fine, we haven't really lost too much. And then the answers were sort of, they were pressed a bit more on that by a press conference host Tom Clarkson and the journalists in the room, and it just, the guard sort of just slipped that, actually, like, we can't be doing this tomorrow. And then most telling of all was the final answer, like, do we need team orders for tomorrow? And both of them pretty much said, ask Mattia, and killed their answer there. And neither of them are perhaps like in a Daniel Ricciardo sphere of being sort of so bubbly and, you know, always struggling to sort of conceal their smile. But this was definitely not even downbeat. I'd put it frustration.
Ask Mattia. That's very, very interesting. That's kind of the summation of what they had to say, because it was actually something that was put to Mattia Binotto in the earlier press conference early in the day. So that takes place on a Saturday morning before FP2 today. Binotto was asked about team orders, obviously in the wake of what happened at Silverstone, the strategy there and everything. And firstly, he denied a report in the Italian press that was actually written by a former Ferrari press officer, citing a source claiming that some of the Ferrari team members had refused to go to the podium at Silverstone because of their frustration over what had happened and Leclerc losing the race after leading because of the strategy call. But he said he went and checked that with the team to make sure that wasn't the case, and it definitely wasn't. He said that he and Charles Leclerc sort of talked about things and they were laughing at these incorrect reports. But he was also talking about team orders, and he said, basically, you're always wrong. If you put in team orders, everyone's really angry because you've used team orders. And he mentioned here in Austria in 2002, when Ferrari asked Barrichello to move aside for Michael Schumacher, he said, I remember the booing. And he said, but then if we don't do team orders, then your cars are fighting and they'll trip over each other and we'll have issues like Silverstone. So it kind of feels like you can't really win. Do you sympathise with that a little bit?
No, I don't. I'm going to go for two reasons. I know it's a bit flat out. We've already had a team orders debate this season, and that was Spain, and we're arguing, was it too early for Red Bull to impose Verstappen ahead of Perez? Well, one answer to that is a slightly intangible. Did it then motivate Perez to go and win in Monaco? In which case, fine, that's good. Maybe Sainz or Leclerc, you know, it's probably more Sainz that's going to fall foul of team orders. Maybe he can be sort of incentivized by it to close the gap. And the other thing is, Is it not? Does it make more sense as sort of your percentage chance or something? That if you've got two cars fighting each other, sort of, let's say lap after lap, they crash, you get no points. Is it not better just to establish an order? And I know Ferrari really need to be doing some heavy lifting to close the gap, but when it comes to writing their press release or evaluating the day, a 3-4 has got to be better than a double DNF or one car's crushing. So again, I think asserting team orders, yes, it's going to upset one of the drivers. Sainz must surely understand that he dropped the ball early in the season. It took him a time to get acclimatised to this car. He crashed in Australia. He must understand there are consequences to that, not only mathematical in terms of being behind Leclerc in the championship, but also maybe he'll have to play second fiddle. And okay, he can use the rest of the season to really nail what makes his car tick, either come on late in the season and really ask a question of Ferrari, or come fighting out of the box in 2023. Perhaps it's too early to give up on a season, but you know, Ferrari are decorated. When Ferrari are in the fight, F1 is good. They're not doing that at the moment. They need to sort of be a bit more firm. And yes, it's harsh, but there's a reason why Red Bull are walking away with this championship, not just down to imposing team orders, but surely you'd look to copy the blueprint team.
You mentioned about needing to do the heavy lifting there, and one team that really has to do that overnight was Mercedes. After both George Russell and Lewis Hamilton crashed out in Q3 yesterday, Toto Wolff, he talked about it in the press conference this morning, and he said it was like someone had dropped a Lego car in the garage because of all the pieces that were everywhere. It was a big job by Mercedes. Because we were under park fermé conditions, they couldn't even break the curfew to work later hours on the car than normal. So it meant Russell only got out on track about 15 minutes into FP1, Lewis Hamilton only got on track with about 15 minutes remaining in the session, so not a full day for them. But Russell ended up a fairly lonely fourth, I think it's fair to say, in the sprint. He said that maybe he expected a little bit more in terms of pace. Lewis Hamilton, he was a bit more downbeat. He spent a lot of that race squabbling Mick Schumacher for eighth place and a single point. But he said that the car doesn't feel quite right after the crashes and everything that's been done. Had to undergo a chassis change as well. How impressed are you by the recovery by Mercedes given the crashes? Were you maybe expecting a little bit more given the upbeat noises we had coming out of the team since these updates?
First off, I really appreciated Toto's analogy. I'm a big Lego fan, so that's
me
something
too. What is your favourite Lego set, Matt Q?
Oh, well, it's not mine, it's my brother's, but it was like an early 2000s run of Lego Technic Formula 1 cars. And the reason they're my favourite is because I'm a very materialistic person. I think they're flogging for about £800 on eBay, wow. So I'll take that one.
Wow, very, very nice. I've got the McLaren, this year's McLaren one they released, but I think with the original stickers, which, and it's still, I haven't brought it out of the box. Apparently that's gone up in value.
I should also add, I've got my favourite one is the DB5 Lego one with all the Bond gadgets.
Nice, nice.
And I bought a set of lights and I've plumbed those in, so it illuminates the room.
Oh, wow.
I would say it's good for entertaining, but you show them your Lego Aston Martin and
they leave quite quickly, don't they?
Absolutely. I think the interesting place to start with the Mercedes is that, as Toto, these were two cases of snap oversteer. So was it wind, which I think Lando Norris had said, you know, it's
dusty. he was in the pen watching the Lewis replay, and one of our colleagues sort of said, "Oh, Lando, like, what do you think?" And Lando went, "Yeah, wind. He thought it was a wind that would have caught him out."
So I asked that, and then the other sort of get out of jail free clause offered was that Mercedes have clearly taken a step forward in terms of one lap pace. They were a credible pole threat, probably as per their calculation would have ended up sort of a tenth and a half adrift, but they were in the fight. They were going to make it interesting. So the fact that they both had really similar incidents and snap oversteer, was that a case that they had almost reached a critical limit with balance and found a bit of an instability, the aero had stalled? Wolf said no to those, but did say his drivers have been a bit more confident in this tricky to drive car and carried 10 kilometers extra into the corners. I take that to mean that's a driver error, and he's being a very diplomatic way about that. They carried too much speed and got it wrong. Even if the car is difficult, you've got to drive to its limitations. Anyway, yeah, like you say, Russell had a lonely race. Probably as expected, I would have thought, sort of behind the top three, with Perez obviously doing a bit of a recovery drive and ahead of everywhere else. And Hamilton, good progress initially, was with all the sort of turn one drama with Gasly getting turned around, picked up a few places and you know, was fighting with the Williams. And then he obviously got stuck behind the Haas cars, and it's one of those, do you put it down to just this being a short lap, limited overtaking opportunities, that Mercedes with DRS not being as quick as a Ferrari engine, so sort of not a great day. This is not the Brazil sprint race of last year where over the weekend he comes from the back of the grid to win, but in the context of 2022 Mercedes, not their worst day at the office.
No, it was still odd to see Lewis Hamilton out there fighting with the Haas of Mick Schumacher. I want to come on to Haas next, because they, after what, I mean, a pretty good result, let's say another couple of points on the board for them, both inside the top 10 for tomorrow's Grand Prix, for a team that's had a bit of an up and down season. I think that's a success. Mick Schumacher, he wasn't particularly pleased after the sprint. He said that he thought that Haas should have swapped the cars round, that he had more pace than Kevin Magnussen, that that way they would have got 7th and 8th instead of the 7th and 9th that they got in the end. And he kept asking over the radio about swapping, and Haas said to him, no, we're not doing it. Our esteemed colleague Stuart Codling, who is at the wheel of our very fine Audi A4, it must be noted, he went and spoke to Günther after Günther Steiner, the Haas team principal, after the sprint, and Steiner explained that no, that it wasn't the case at all, that the driver behind is always going to be quicker because of DRS. So actually looking at the times and monitoring the data, it was completely the right call to keep the drivers where they were. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think Haas played it right, guaranteeing 2 points instead of trying to risk it for three? And also Mick Schumacher, I mean, even though he's okay ninth and not scored a point today, this is a pretty good run of form from him.
He's obviously maybe it's premature to say turn a corner after a string of big shunts, but he's confident, he's quick, and there's the gap to Magnussen, if there is a case of if there is one now, because throughout qualifying and the sprint race today they were very evenly matched. I'm going to sort of be a bit of a hypocrite, having come down so hard on one side with Ferrari team orders, and say that probably in this case Haas had a were probably right to play it safe, and it offers a good test run for the full Grand Prix. And the reason I say that is because, you know, we knew that last year was a write-off. They had two inexperienced drivers and a bad car, and they piled their resources into the new regs. But it hasn't really paid off. They haven't, you know, taken huge strides up. They've been a bit, you know, after a promising start to the season, they've been a bit lost towards the back of the midfield. They haven't updated their car anywhere near as significantly as the others, but they have this really good baseline. They understand what makes it tick. So I'm going to say that, yes, they haven't got points today for the sprint race, but if you translate that tomorrow, getting a seventh and a ninth double points finish is really respectable when they're trying to do that midfield fight. And that potentially, I'm going to say, sort of risk versus reward. If Magnussen checks his pace to allow Schumacher to close, does Hamilton then get by both of them rather than just one, and then you lose more points as a result? So I'm going to say probably conservative with small c strategy, but maybe a smart one.
That was exactly the point Günther Steiner made as well. So, yes, you guys are on the same page there.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. So, yes, those were the point scorers from today's Austria sprint race. Also worth mentioning, Sergio Perez fought his way from 13th up to 5th. He said it was pretty annoying that he'd been made to wait, basically, about that penalty from qualifying for exceeding track limits. Said that he risked, obviously, his car in Q3, used the tyres up in Q3, something happened in Q2, and he shouldn't have even been there anyway. So wasn't particularly pleased with the FIA. And someone else who wasn't particularly pleased with the FIA was Sebastian Vettel, who, it emerged on Saturday evening, he, 24 hours earlier, had stormed out of the driver's briefing. The FIA issued a summons calling Vettel to see the stewards over his behaviour in the driver's briefing and a breach of the International Sporting Code. That was followed after the hearing by another bulletin by the FIA stewards, who issued a suspended €25,000 fine. They confirmed that Vettel had left the driver's briefing without permission, and I think we can safely say that wouldn't have been done in a very quiet and relaxed manner. It also mentioned his behaviour in the meeting and the frustration he showed, and it also said, "Drivers at this level are role models for every driver around the world, and in the opinion of the stewards, Vettel failed to live up to that standard in this case." Now, a lot's been said since that came out. George Russell spoke about it. He said about the inconsistency of the stewards this year. There's no accountability because you'll have one set of stewards for a race, they'll make a decision, and then by the next race when you want to talk about it, it's a different set of stewards. He also said that we probably need to stop rotating the race director between Niels Wittich and Eduardo Freitas. We need to stick with one or the other. But I think probably the standout thing from that FIA statement was what they said about Vettel not being a role model. Now, Matt, so many times we'll be talking about various stories and everything like that. We might do a press conference, and you'll often send me a message going, "Vettel, what a good egg," or "What a good man, what a good human being," for the morals he's got and everything he stands for. Although I understand where the FIA are coming from with this, and you don't want to see a driver storm out of a driver's briefing, to say that Vettel failed to be a role model, what are your thoughts on that?
I wholeheartedly disagree. Whether it's, you know, what Vettel's done on Question Time, sort of holding the UK government to account better than anyone else, whether it's, you know, he's running a bee helmet here, and that's symbolic of, you know, his work or his raising awareness around climate change, whether it's visiting sort of young offenders, to say he's not a role model. And let's think about context. This is only coming sort of 10 days after what Nelson Piquet has said, what Yuri Vips has done. You know, you've got a three-time champion there. They released a statement and have potentially taken away his paddock pass, whereas with Vettel, they fined him £25,000, which is a lot for starters. And also, it's just what does it say of the direction of the new Premiership? I thought they were trying to sort of put distance between themselves and the previous regime, whether that's getting rid of Michael Massey and sort of the sense that the FIA, there can be no dissent. You know, we saw after Abu Dhabi that they put out and go, you know, it's not us, it's the fans that have interpreted this wrong. And I understand that they have to lay down the rules somewhere. They have to lay down a line and stop, or make an example perhaps of Vettel and saying this is not the way drivers should act. But it's coming back to this thing, are they trying to be separate, or is this the FIA going, no, you cannot speak out against us, we cannot be held accountable for everything because we get everything right? And that is what I don't understand. And again, it's all about, we're journalists, right? We spend so much of our time writing. We care so much about words. So the choice of questioning him as a role model, those two words specifically, I take huge umbrage with.
No, rightly so. I fully agree with you, mate. I think it's, I understand the FIA's frustration and that they want those drivers' briefings. They need to be done in a certain way. It does seem that some of it came down to, I think it was the pit lane entry line. That's what Toto Wolff said he understood, and he said he wasn't sure, but that's what he'd heard. But it was over this sort of policing of such a minor thing, and in terms of the priorities, the bigger picture, as you mentioned there, it seems to miss the mark. So, I'll be very interested to see what Seb has got to say after tomorrow's race. That is the next opportunity we'll get to talk to him. And, of course, we must now look forward to the Austrian Grand Prix. 71 laps coming up on Sunday. Max Verstappen on pole position with Leclerc and Sainz starting just behind him. As you said, the data shows that maybe there's a bit of hope for Ferrari to get into the fight there. What kind of race do you think is going to play out? Do you think that, I mean, how marginal on tyres do you think it's going to be? Is there hope to think that Verstappen isn't just going to run away with this?
I'm going to say yes, because I want it to be a good race.
You optimist, you.
Absolutely. I suppose to come back to what I was discussing at the start of the podcast and sort of what Ferrari can do, the unknown is tyres. I know it's not a sexy topic, but it is an important one. So we've got to talk about it. And that is that Verstappen in FP2 was on the mediums, and his average lap time was about a tenth quicker than Leclerc, but Leclerc was doing it on the softs, and there's a Pirelli estimator sort of a 3/10 offset between softs and mediums, so that could potentially put Verstappen, you know, over a stint 4/10 a lap ahead, which is really ominous. The other worrying thing is that Ferrari had all this data on the softs, didn't use them in the sprint. And then the noise coming out of Red Bull is all about how the hard tyres will play a key role in the race. Now, Ferrari and Red Bull haven't run the hard tyres this weekend, so they have no data on them. Red Bull do at least have those extra laps worth of data on the medium tyre from FP2 and were quicker on them. So that is the worry. And then if you add in anything else like Ferrari team orders or the pressure cooker of the, you know, of the race and the strategy getting wrong, or who knows, even an engine going up, then it looks potentially like a long way back for Leclerc and Sainz tomorrow. But let's not think about that now. Let's be positive.
Indeed. Well, I think either way, it's going to be a fascinating race tomorrow. Matt, thank you very much for joining me. And be sure to check out autosport.com throughout tomorrow. We've got the live blog running. We'll obviously have all of the news analysis throughout the day. Make sure you do also read Matt's fantastic analysis of all of the data from practice. And last but not least, of course, make sure you join us again tomorrow night for the Autosport podcast, reviewing...
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
All of the action in the Austrian Grand Prix. We will see you then.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
The is it morning yet deal, how about now or now, because morning time is McDonald's breakfast time, and that's the best time of all the times.
Wake up with a little splash of sweetness. Get any size iced coffee from caramel to hazelnut to French vanilla for just 99 cents until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.